Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Voice of the Iceberg. I'm Alison Balance, and this is Revelation, part two of a four-part audio adventure from RNZ, in which we join artist Joseph Michael and his team on an expedition to the Antarctic Peninsula. They're recording photos, film, and audio of icebergs that will be projected onto landmark buildings around the world, creating virtual bergs. In part one, we journeyed across the Drake Passage and recorded an iceberg that the team named Deacons. We met photographer Joseph Michael, behind-the-scenes director Ryan McNeil, safety guide Nick Fluvier, sound recordist Mark Michelle, a.k.a. Mitch, and skipper of the yacht Australis, Roger Wallace. Now the team are hard at work finding, photographing, and recording icebergs.
This is a New Zealander. We're fairly aware of Antarctica. There's a lot of connections there, and we're always hearing stories about it. But, you know, finding out how huge it is, a lot of people don't really understand how huge it is. I certainly didn't.
It's nice and dead out there with the snow today.
Oh, that's much easier when it's still like this. Yesterday was a bit of a mission.
Yeah.
That's what's nice about this, actually. See the little light dusting of snow we've got on it? It's giving it some beautiful highlights.
I'm Mike Williams, and I'm physical oceanographer at NIWA and also director of the Deep South National Science Challenge. Antarctica has got all this ice because basically it's cold. So any rainfall or anything like that is always going to be snow. But what's important to understand about Antarctica is there's actually two types of ice. There's sea ice, which is frozen seawater, and then we have the continental ice. And that's where we get our icebergs from. So although we always evoke the image of icebergs being adrift in the sea, they're actually land ice that has come off the continent and is drifting out to sea.
This is really interesting. I like this one, eh? Look, even in through here, it's beautiful. And look at the lines. It's like dripping paint. Big berg.
Right, big berg.
There are different kinds of icebergs. Some we describe by their shape. So, for example, we talk about tabular icebergs, which are the big, flat, square ones. And then we also define iceberg by their names. And there's some great names. For example, very small ones we talk about as bergy bits. But then once we get to the larger ones, they're kind of, the names are a bit less exciting. It's kind of small, medium, large, extra large.
Brash ice, just the really small ones, all this really small broken up stuff.
Yeah, once they get as big as, the boat sort of thing, you've got to call them icebergs then.
Icebergs, okay.
Yeah. By the time, big growlers, you don't want to hit big growlers at speed. You can damage the prop or dent the hull or just knock your paintwork around. Brash ice doesn't do much harm at all. Any of this ice is really too big and too hard to hit at speed. You can sort of bump into it a bit, a glancing blow, but once the bergs get too big, you don't want to get your rigging caught up in them. And then you've got to think of your propeller and rudder.
Every iceberg is different. It's like the flames of a fire. Everything's just all different, just continually different. Yeah. You just wonder how there can be so many different shapes.
As scientists, when we try and study icebergs or try and incorporate them into our models and things like that, is we have to start treating them as cubes with rules, which really doesn't capture their individual nature. Icebergs have been carved by nature over time, by the little processes where little things have melted, where individual waves have eroded icebergs, where they've rolled, where they've collided. They're a bit like people who have a life story, and it's their life story that has shaped how they are when we see them.
I can't fit it in any of my lenses. I need to go wider.
I've got 14 here.
I guess the easiest way to explain scale and size would be to liken them to large buildings. You know, we are looking at pieces of ice which, above the water, look like a fairly large three-story building, and realising that below the surface there's even more under there. There's this immense piece of ice deep down under the water below the boat as well. Quite a sense of scale, make you feel pretty small.
It's not a pretty choice. We'll go around this and then we might pull up alongside and just send Nick up the crow's nest just to see, because we might come back with the drone.
I grabbed a hold of the fleet of GoPros and ended up being the guy that would climb the mast and fix cameras around the place. And I really spent a lot of time up the mast. If we were photographing or surface mapping the bigger icebergs, I would be up the mast. I loved being able to see into the water. I really, really remember that. I could see the ice below the surface, and at times when we're motoring around a big iceberg with a soaring wall much higher than the mast, if I looked down into the water, I could see that there's, you know, reefs of ice below the boat that we're motoring over. You know, there's this immense amount of ice below the surface that we just couldn't see from on deck.
We talk about the tip of the iceberg, and the reason for that story is that we know around about a seventh to a tenth of the iceberg is all that's visible above the water. And the rest is sitting down below the water. And that comes just from the different density that ice has to water. So if we've got lots of ice and snow, then the iceberg will sit a bit higher in the water, but if it's pure ice, it'll sit lower. And what that means, of course, is as the iceberg gets smaller, its top sits lower and lower and lower. So we're able to make some really good estimates about how much of an iceberg is underwater just by looking at the shape of what we can see above water. So we visualise the big ones as being tens of metres tall or hundreds of kilometres long, but icebergs can be any size down to a couple of metres floating in the ocean with their heads just above the water.
Yoko was a very small berg. It's only, 2.5 metres wide, very delicate, and it was just a peculiar looking thing. It was unusual, and it was something that we hadn't seen before, and that was what I was looking for. I was looking for different shapes and different surfaces and also different looking icebergs. So it wasn't a clear iceberg, but it was a very blue looking colour, and it had an unusual look to it. It had very thin ice flakes on it, and as we got closer, we were probably still 10 metres or so away from it. Over the sound of the engine, I could hear this popping and cracking coming from it. And so I think before I even photographed it, I sent Mitch in with the hydrophone to capture what the hell was going on.
Now, I remember Yoko, Mark and I went out in the tender together, and Yoko was relatively small, with beautiful sculptured, quite a melted iceberg, so very glassy ice. The light refracting through that was quite something. But that was all about sound when we went out with Mark.
It was
bubbling and fizzing away, it kind of sounded like that magic gum you have as a kid, or like bacon and eggs. And there's these tiny little flakes of ice that are sort of cracking and breaking. It was amazing. It's fantastic.
Yoko was an angry little thing, incredibly boisterous. It was quite small, but quite a dense ice, so quite an older ice in its makeup. And it was fizzing and crackling and spitting, almost like it was on fire. It had this this kind of ember burning sonic to it. And it was incredible that something so small could be emanating such an incredibly loud and boisterous sonic. So I started just cruising around Yoko with the stereo mics, using a mono mic as well, so that I could try and target some of the real particular sounds that were happening within it. And also started using the hydrophone at this point around the icebergs. I think this was the first iceberg that I used the hydrophone. And again, that was producing a lot of really loud pops and fizzes.
Because of that whole compression process when the snow was turned into ice, as it gets squeezed, then all the air that was trapped inside the ice or inside the snow and the ice is all compressed, and the gas is squeezed down into bubbles at really high pressure. A little bit like if it's in a dive tank or a CO2 cylinder in a soda stream. So then when we pop that piece of ice in water and it starts melting, and the gas just starts bubbling out of that and generates a little bit of fizz in the ice.
It was quite something here, and that popping, crackling, it was constant, constantly cracking and popping. And Yoko was the only one that seemed to do, she just did that. The other icebergs, depending on where you went around them, you would hear different sounds. Sometimes you drop the hydrophone in the water and you might hear cracking and popping. Other icebergs, that the deep booming sounds that you'd capture. I was amazed at all the frequencies we were hearing, deep, deep, deep booming sounds right up to really high treble crackling and pops. They're alive. They're constantly changing. Everything's moving, sort of impermanent, I guess.
So once it's drifting around the ocean, the two things that are going to control where it goes are the wind and the ocean currents, and they act to steer the iceberg. But at the same time, what's also happening is the bottom is melting. It's now exposed to much warmer water underneath, and so it's, the bottom is slowly melting away, and that starts to make it nice and round and smooth. And we have waves hitting the side of the iceberg, and the waves start carving away at the side of the iceberg. So it starts to become unstable as it melts in different places and erodes in different places. So it will potentially roll, or big pieces will come off it, or it will carve many icebergs off the side of it. So it becomes a very dynamic beast that changes its shape and its orientation as it goes through its journey, which could be, in some cases, decades, because if they don't escape from Antarctica, they still stay in relatively cold water, so they can survive for a long time.
From early on, I wanted to find some way of representing scale. In a lot of my landscape photographs, it's very hard to figure out exactly how big the landscape is. You know, it's very easy if you put a boat or if you put something in the frame, but I like to keep, especially my photography, I like to keep the landscape as pure as possible. So there was just an answer to that question, is how I would represent Antarctica and icebergs in a way that doesn't involve putting a human object in there. that sort of developed into the scale is all the buildings that we're surrounded by around the city, you know, are quite representative of what icebergs look and feel like. And so it just seemed logical to take an iceberg and wrap a building. I knew I wanted to map these icebergs, but I didn't entirely know the correct procedure for that, or how I would do it, or how it would become useful in post, or because they're not definite shapes. They're kind of circles, and they have many sides to them.
So Roger's going to take us on a bit of a tiki tour around, because he reckons there's some really spectacular ones over the other side, and then we can kind of get a feel, come back tonight, and then work out a couple to sort of map, and maybe on the way out.
When we first went out, we went out in the Zodiac and we were circling around in the Zodiac, and then we worked out that that wasn't going to be appropriate for mapping the bergs. Then we had to call in the big guns and we actually, you know, we circumnavigated the icebergs with the big yacht.
That's good, yep.
So my name is Thomas Helita, and I'm an actual cinematographer or photographer. So I was sort of a visual Swiss Army knife in a way. We would ask the captain of the boat to sail around it, to rotate around it, and I would basically be on deck.
Make a slow turn there.
And try to capture as many photos.
Yeah, that's good.
Of the side of the iceberg, of the actual cliffs, as the boat was moving.
We would literally travel from one iceberg and then we would loop around it a couple of times.
If you could just pop it in neutral just as we cruise onto this corner, Roger, it'd be good.
You'd detect the iceberg on the radar, and depending on how far I wanted to be away, say if I wanted to be 10 or 20 metres away, he would just set it on the radar and keep that radius from the iceberg as we travelled round.
Yeah, we'll just loop right around it again, Roger. Nick's up high. He just wants to get a glimpse into the inside just to see...
The path that the boat takes is a GPS map of it, and that people can research that on the internet. And so back home, Roger was getting emails from people wondering why we were doing all these circly, loopy, weird trips in the boat, because we were circling round and round icebergs and it looked really strange that they hadn't seen that before. There we go. There was a number of things that I wanted to capture, so I was mapping, photographically mapping the icebergs. So I had Thomas was helping me with the assistance of mapping the icebergs. I would operate one camera on a wider lens and Thomas would be on a tighter lens capturing photographic panels. So we had huge resolution plates of the icebergs.
And then later on in the post-production process, we would actually ask the software to stitch, to put all the photos together. A good metaphor is an orange skin. So you imagine how the iceberg is an orange, and you can just imagine peeling off the skin of the orange and put it flat, and then we would project this, wrap this in a way around the building when we got back in Auckland.
So the aim was to find, you know, at least 10 icebergs that we could photographically map, and the other thing that was essential was to and difficult, obviously, is to capture ice crashing and carving off the side of the icebergs and glaciers, so we can then use that as part of the installation.
Well, so if there's an archway in a building, we'll probably use that and try and...
With Valentine, it was the 14th of February. It was close to a rock outcrop, so we could film the iceberg from it, and it had this huge archway that looked like it was about to collapse.
Oh, this piece in the middle of the archway looks like it's just ready to drop.
So the rest of the team spent a whole day sitting in front of Valentine to capture this ginormous archway.
Yeah, there's a pre-record function on the camera, which I'll enable, which means I can just wait for the moment that the ice falls, hit the button, and it will record the previous 20, 30 seconds. So it's a good little feature, which hopefully means we can grab it, but it's a bit hit and miss because it's pretty unpredictable.
Part part of it carved off during the day. We were sitting there, and we spent a good 10 hours or more, I think, all day and right up into the evening. Of course, it's not dark until 10 or 11, and we got some fabulous footage, and I got some great audio. And we were just waiting. We knew that this archway was going to move at some point.
Valentine, I got up about 5 a.m. and the light was really nice. Some mornings you would just get a little tickle of sunrise. So I grabbed my camera while the other guys were getting the rest of the camera gear ready, and I went out on the Zodiac and went around and filmed it. Mitch jumped in with me.
She's got a big crack, and that crack is starting to get bigger, so a reasonable amount's going to carve off it, and I'm sitting here ready with my audio gear, and it's going to go in the next couple few hours, we think.
So I dropped him off on a rock, and I went round and I took a series of photographs, and then I went back to the boat to get the other guys, and we were getting all the cameras, and they were preparing for a whole, you know, another 16 hours in front of this iceberg.
I sat there by myself while the crew were, while the team were getting ready to get all the equipment set up, probably about 50 metres away sitting on a rock. And I had a couple of microphones set up, the stereo mic set up and surround, as well as the surround sound microphone. And it started really moving. And I realised that it probably wasn't too far away. There were large slabs that were breaking off from the top of the archway. And there were parts that were starting to carve off. So I was there on my Todd and really hoping that the crew would get back so that they could witness it visually. And then she went. And it was, yeah, pretty awe-inspiring and a little bit nerve-wracking, because when the whole thing completely collapsed, it sent out a massive shower of large chunks of ice. So in the recording itself, you can actually hear it collapse over a period of time, its final collapse, and then a whole range of baseball, softball-sized pieces of ice spraying all around me, at which point I was diving for cover and just making sure the microphone was still working, hoping not to get hit.
As we were loading the gear back into the boat, I looked over and could see it, you know, off in the distance, and something looked different about the horizon, and what had happened is the whole archway had collapsed. So when we turned up, Mitch had recorded the whole thing, and he witnessed the whole archway collapsing. But we sort of arrived to this destruction, and what happens when an iceberg breaks apart is you get this brash ice in the water, and it sort of splinters. It's reminiscent of coming into a cyclone or an earthquake, and as you come close to the iceberg, you're greeted with this wall of ice cubes. We call it brash ice. So it breaks apart and it spreads out into the water. And so before you can even get to the iceberg, you sort of discover this. And so then we were sort of wading our way through the carnage to get close to it.
So the one that got away for the team, so I feel incredibly privileged that I was able to witness it myself and to be able to record it. And yeah, quite a lovely thing to have all on my own, I suppose, even though the rest of the team didn't get to experience it.
That was Revelation, part two of Voice of the Iceberg. You heard from Joseph Michael, Ryan McNeil, Mark Michel, a.k.a. Mitch, Nick Fluvier and Thomas Hilletta, as well as scientist Mike Williams. The Voice of the Iceberg podcast series was produced and edited for RNZ by me, Alison Balance, with field audio from Ryan McNeil and Mark Michel, and sound engineering by Mark Chesterman. music by Rian Sheehan was composed for Antarctica, While You Were Sleeping, an exhibition projecting a digital iceberg onto the exterior of the Auckland War Memorial Museum as part of the 2017 Auckland Arts Festival. Want to check out photos of the bergs? Find out how they got their names. Head to rnz.co.nz/iceberg. You can download all four episodes from there, and you can also find the series on iTunes and Spotify. Please rate us if you liked what you heard. And if you want to stick around for another 30 seconds, here's some more of that fizzy iceberg Yoko and of Valentine's great collapse.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.